Welcome to the iHeart Community Spotlight, a weekly public affairs program where we talk about what's going on with nonprofit agencies and organizations around the Monterey County area. And today's program brings us to the Read to Me Project, which is located here in Salinas. I'm Mark Carbonaro, Public Affairs Director here at iHeart Media. Our special guests today are Barbara Greenway, Executive Director, and Rafael Hernandez, Associate Director of the Read to Me Project. Barbara and Rafael, welcome to the program.
Great. Thank you for having us. It's wonderful to be able to talk to the public today.
Good morning, Mark. Great to be here.
Thank you both. So let's learn a little bit about the Read to Me Project and what it's all about. I first became aware of the Read to Me Project recently when I was looking at my email inbox, and I had received some correspondence from Mary DeGroote, and she sent me a little note about a special event that your organization is sponsoring along with the First Tee of Monterey County. It's coming up on Sunday, May 1st, and we want to talk about that later on in the program, but I didn't know that the Read to Me Project existed. So let's all learn a little bit about Read to Me Project. And first and foremost, tell us what it is. And I don't know if Barbara, if you want to take that, or Rafael.
Well, let's see. Essentially what it is we go to elementary schools and we work with fourth, fifth, and sixth grade students and coach them and train them to read to their younger baby siblings from 6-7 months old up to 4-5 years old. And we give the participating classrooms a library of books, and the books are pre-selected based on the age of the younger sibling, age-appropriate content, and also for the ability of the reading level of the student that's going to be reading. And throughout the school year, we provide coaching, training. We talk about early brain development, the importance of reading to young children, and we talk about and practice the 9 best ways to read to young children.
I was thinking about this on the way over here. Reading, and we've heard the saying, reading is fundamental, right? And it really, truly is. And I was trying to think of something that I could maybe create an analogy or something similar to it, but when we look around a lot of issues that plague our community today, at the root of it generally is a lack of education. You know, the issues that people have in their lives, oftentimes it comes from a lack of education. And then when we get down to what is symbiotic of the lack of education, and that is an inability to comprehend what is around them. Well, comprehension comes from what skill? Reading. The better you can read, the more able you are to comprehend, and from there, you're able to learn. Reading teaches us the ability to learn, to access information, and to take in knowledge, or to build knowledge. So it's like a house without a foundation. A house without a foundation can stand, but not for long. It'll eventually sag and then collapse. And that's what we find in our community with people who lack education. They're like that house without the foundation. So, Barbara, tell us about how this project got started. What was the genesis of the Read to Me Project?
Thank you. I'm glad you used the word foundation, because that is what we talk to the students about the foundation for learning. And before children can become literate, learn to read and write, they have to have a very solid, strong, and deep foundation in language and vocabulary and experiences and basic knowledge. And the Read to Me Project does that. It brings the knowledge and pre-literacy skills into the home at a very young age. So the program started in 2011. I was a speech and language specialist for many years, working in Salinas and East Los Angeles and South County here. And during that time, I was always approached by kindergarten teachers at the beginning of every school year. They would come to me and ask me to test children who were coming to school in kindergarten at age 5, not able to access the classroom curriculum. They weren't understanding. They weren't able to communicate very well. They were lost. The teachers would say, I don't know what to do with these children. And I would go ahead and screen them and test them as a speech therapist and find that really what was happening was they were lacking basic readiness skills. It wasn't anything wrong with them. They weren't special ed children. They just hadn't had the exposure. And they were often functioning about 2 years behind. So they were coming into kinder at age 5, thinking and talking like 3-year-olds. And the problem with that is that it's very difficult for classroom teachers to make up that gap. And the research is showing also that this gap is real, and it starts at birth. The gap begins at birth, starting within a few months. The children who are living in families where there's education and a lot of enriched language, those children begin to just shoot up in their skills, and the other children children who aren't exposed in the same way lag, and that difference is, as I said, as much as 2 years.
So part of the problem is if you're growing up in a home where there hasn't been an appreciation for education or people are lacking in education skills, then the child is going to be behind children that are in homes where you say they have that enriched atmosphere, a lot of verbal speaking, and maybe not as much looking at the television. Is part of the problem that some parents will put a child in front of the TV set as a babysitter?
Yes. Language is social, and it's learned through social interaction. And unfortunately, screens, any screens, not just television, but any screen that a child is put in front of at an early age, basically inhibits development of language. It doesn't improve language development. It inhibits it. Language is learned early, but through parent and child engagement, grandparent engagement, any caregiver who's interacting with a child or any sibling provides that engagement that's important.
Raphael, did you want to add something to that?
Just to echo what Barbara said, there was a study that they showed a child, I think the baby was under a year old, interacting with another person who was speaking Mandarin to the child. And then they had another child doing the same thing with a TV program in Mandarin as well. And in both cases, they showed that the children were very attentive, but the one that was with the live person was able to interact, throw a ball around. And after a certain period of time, they tested both children, and the one that interacted with the live person had Mandarin speaking abilities, whereas the child that was watching the Mandarin speaking person on TV, even though the child enjoyed it and seemed to be engaged, really didn't pick up any skills. So that says something.
So would that be when you're interacting, you're speaking as well, you're actually using the skills that you're, say, the child is watching on television, whereas when you're just watching, you're silent, you're not truly interacting. To one sense, you are interacting, but not that fully or whole interaction that's needed.
Language is two ways. The reason we use language is so we can interact with other people, and a child learns that very early on, that it's when they use the term serve and return, that language is a serve and return activity. Somebody has to respond. Someone has to show interest. Someone has to light up when they hear you speak, and vice versa. It goes both ways. And so language, speaking, and comprehension occur during that kind of serve and return interaction.
And this is something that you had noticed in your years as a speech therapist. What triggered in your mind to say, hey, there has to be a better way?
Well, after all my years, I just realized that I was part of the problem, in a sense, because I realized that children weren't being engaged very early at home. I was working in public schools. The problem with that is that we're putting fires out in the public school. The problem starts very young, very early in the home, and by the time a child is in school, we're putting fires out. So once I realized that I was part of the problem, that I needed to do something different. One day, driving to work, I just had an idea. I thought, well, why don't we just bring books into 4th, 5th, and 6th grade classrooms, and those children who have young siblings at home will check them out and read them. And my husband happened to be a 4th grade classroom teacher in East Salinas at the time, and so I went home and said, can I bring some books into your class and teach your kids about reading to their siblings? And so he and a few of his friends signed up, and we had 4 classes that started with about 50 students who read to about 60 siblings that first year. And it was amazing. It just rolled out. There were no glitches, no problems. Very simple. It's such a simple idea, which is why I think it's gaining such a foothold in our schools, because it is simple. It's simple to implement. It's inexpensive to implement, and it's fast. I bought books that day, a few days, brought them in the next week, and the program started. I like that.
Was deciding what type of books to use the toughest aspect of getting this going? And how did you come about deciding, well, what should we read?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, it wasn't difficult, but it took time for me to develop a library of books. And I would say it's not even finished at this point. There are still, every year, I tweak it a little bit and bring in some new books. But what I look for in a book, first of all, our readers in 4th, 5th, and 6th grade are behind in their reading skills. They themselves were not ready for kindergarten, many of them, and they have never caught up. And so they're reading behind grade level. So the books are simple, about 2.5 grade level or below. The pictures are rich with content. The pictures are rich for vocabulary development. And the books basically are relevant to the children. The content is going to expand their knowledge. For instance, I always like to have books about snow. Most of our kids don't get to the snow. Some kids don't even get to the beach, even though it's a few minutes away. And so books about those kind of experiences are a wonderful way to open up that world of knowledge to the children.
Raphael, I know you wanted to add something to Barbara's comments, so go right ahead.
I just want to say that I was really impressed impressed by looking at these little mini libraries that we give the classrooms. You know how in certain supplements, you look at the back and it'll say a proprietary blend of XYZ herbs and ingredients. I mean, that's how I see these mini libraries that she's put together. Like, they're a proprietary blend of different books that we look at. We look at the vocabulary, the pictures, almost like we're chefs sampling the sauce. Is that a little bit more of this, not enough of that? And this, of course, lends itself to the work we do with the students, which is what I mentioned before, the 9 best ways to read to young children, which includes talking about the pictures, making your voice interesting, using I wonder statements, things like this, which it's a blast. Have a lot of fun working with the students on these things. And of course, that's why the book is an important part, but just a part of the whole process.
So the goal of the program, teaching the fourth graders to read to their younger siblings to help develop their language and their skills. And what other benefits do we see accruing from this? For example, the fourth graders themselves, are you seeing a greater appreciation for reading among them and a desire to want to read on their own, not just to read to their younger sibs?
Yes. You know, we give the students a survey at the end of the school year, and one of the questions is, do you feel you've become a better reader through reading to your young brother or sister? And about 70% say yes, that they do think they've improved. Teachers have told us that the children are more confident readers and they're more fluent readers. The books are simple, so we're not sure where they're gaining significant reading skills, but confidence is an important piece of it. The children enjoy reading and have fun while they're doing it, and they see the purpose to these books. And we say to the children, you're going to read to your own children someday because you know how much fun it is. And I think they will.
Does your program teach the students the mechanics of reading and sounding out the words, or is that what the school does?
Exactly. We really don't want to have the children think that this is reading lesson time or that they themselves are teaching their younger siblings how to read. It's the other dimensions, the other aspects of how to, from whatever they've learned in reading from their teachers, how to then just build from there and go off. And you mentioned that you asked what did the students think about this. I mean, one quick comment, the students write a lot of comments to us. One of them here I could read, it says, this is really cool. Reading to my little brother, he always smiles when I read to him. He comes running when he sees the books that I come to read to him. He's really happy. If we have more books for the babies, it will be amazing. That's one comment from a fourth grade student.
Do you find in going into the homes or talking to the kids that in some homes there are no books whatsoever and the only books they have are the ones that you're providing?
Yes. We actually don't go into the homes, but we do ask the students that on their surveys. And yes, there are many, many homes that do not have books. And that's the crux of the problem. You know, these children are coming out of homes, and these parents, they themselves were never read to. They themselves didn't have homes, didn't live in homes with books, and it's just not part of their experience. And so it's very difficult to pass on something that you haven't experienced yourself. And so, yes, and we also give children books. You know, we have a lot of book donations coming in, and we love to give books away. As a matter of fact, we're going to have a big event where we're giving books away coming up in a few weeks. So giving books to children and building home libraries is part of what we do also.
I imagine that one of the challenges in also in getting the attention of the kids for the reading and so forth are these devices. And I'm pointing at a smartphone because almost all kids have cell phones now or they have tablets and they spend so much time on them playing games and doing whatever. Do studies show that there is any sort of impact on the educational process when the kids spend so much time with these electronic devices?
With children that are very young, it's really not beneficial for them to have a device put in front of them. I know a lot of families do that. But what that does, again, language and vocabulary is learned through experience, shared experience, and through real life experiences. It's very critical that young minds have real things, and books bring it to life, and it's a shared experience, not a self experience itself. So I think that learning may be inhibited by overuse of devices. I don't know if you have something else to say about that.
I'm glad you brought this up. Barbara's always talking about screen time. And I'm, as much as I like the devices and all that, I think we all do, I really think I'm an analog person. I just love paper. I love interacting with people. One thing that we've added recently to the Read to Me program is a parent component. So we have these parent sessions, which in the last 8 weeks alone, we've already spoken with over 100 parents in the different districts that we speak to, from Big Sur, Greenfield, Gonzales, Angeles, Kashawa in Carmel Valley, and East Salinas. And we talk about this. We talk about different opportunities within what the parents are already doing to engage with their children. For example, if you're going to be watching your baby, your two-year-old child, and you're going to be in the kitchen cooking, that's already in your schedule, then while you're chopping the onions and the tomatoes and doing what you're doing, you can narrate. You can narrate what you're doing in front to your child. So you can say, here's a tomato. It's round and red, and we're going to cut it in half. And now we're going to cut it in fourths. And now I'm going to chop it up. And here's an onion. It's also round, but this one is yellow, etc. I mean, obvious things. But for a child, a young mind, a brain of 2-3 years old, this is enriching. And the interaction, the engagement is what stimulates that brain growth. So I think when you set this foundation, then instead of putting a smartphone to your child to entertain the child while you're cooking, your voice, your narration becomes the interface that your child is working with. Again, simple things, low tech, but high effect.
And if you have like maybe a 5 or 6 year old child, rather than having them sit down with the tablet and play a game, they can actually help participate. Now, you may not want them using the knife to cut something, but teach them how to set the table, or could you go to the refrigerator and get me a cucumber?
Exactly. That's right. You're just engaging with them and you're saying, oh, mommy needs 2 more carrots. Can you go get 2 more carrots out of the refrigerator? So yes, all of that, those little sweet moments that we share with our children, they're gold and they're the magic that light up the child's brain. Yes.
One of the things I remember in grammar school regarding reading was that there was a program that the school district had where we could purchase books, and these were paperbacks, short books, stories, and I think it was 3rd, 4th, 5th, maybe even up to 6th grade, you could buy these, and they were cheap, 50 cents, 25 cents a book, but it was a program that came in through the school district, and they would collect the money from you and your order sheet, you'd check off what books you wanted, and then, you know, in a couple weeks, the books would arrive, and I remember what a thrill it was when those books would come in and you would anticipate their arriving. Do they still have programs like that?
Yes, that's a Scholastic book program.
Wasn't it Scholastic Books?
Yeah. And they are still around. As a matter of fact, we're with their literacy partnership program, and that's where we get a lot of our books at a very good price. But yeah, they still offer this through the schools. But what my husband has found is he frequently finds that kids are not ordering books anymore, that, you know, only a handful of his, and he works in East Salinas, that only a handful of children are ordering books because maybe there's just too many of those devices around in the home. I don't know.
I'm looking at a poster behind you, Barbara and Raphael, and talks about the 9 best ways to read to young children. And I thought it would be great to be able to go through those. And we could start at the top and go right down them. So number 1 is know your book.
Know your book means just be familiar with the book before you try to read it to your young sibling. That's what we tell the children. You have to know what's in the book, what's coming up next, so that they can give it the best shot when they read it out loud.
Next on the list, find a quiet read-to-me place.
That's very difficult for our students. They live in multifamily homes. They live in homes where there's a lot going on. A lot of screens are on, televisions, radios. And that's one of the most difficult things, is for them to find a quiet place. We even suggest that they just find a corner in a bedroom, or that they ask their parents to help them find a quiet place by turning off some of the music or the television shows. But it is difficult.
You'd be surprised. The kids have gotten pretty creative. They go in closets. They go outside in the car. I've heard a lot of things. And again, this is great because it shows the effort that they're putting into it.
Yeah. Next on the list is cuddle up. Well, that's probably something that everybody likes to do now and again.
That's an easy one. Just get close. We try to, you know, explain to them that you're reading with them, not to them. So yes, cuddle up, get close.
Read slowly is number 4 on the list. The importance of reading slowly?
Well, the little minds need a little more time to understand what's being said. And children sometimes want to read quickly. And so we'll just explain, you need to slow down so that your little person is able to follow along and understand what you're saying.
So we're running down the list of the 9 best ways to read to young children. We've gone through 4 of them. There are 5 more to talk about. And there was something else that I had gotten a kind of a visual signal on, and that's about reading to bears or having bears around when you read. And there are some stuffed teddy bears here at the Read to Me Project. Okay, what about the bears?
Well, we use the bears during our classroom presentation. So we bring the bear in, and we use the bear to show as an example how you would read to a young child. And the kids really enjoy the bear. And we use the bear just for demonstration purposes and for a little few jokes while we're at it.
Next on the list, number 5, is make your voice interesting while you're reading. So talk about that.
Well, obviously, this can go many different ways. The big example that we like to show is if you're reading a book, whose main character is an animal, when that character speaks, you have to speak like that animal. If it's a mouse, you're going to make your voice really small like a mouse. If it's a gorilla, you're going to sound like a gorilla, etc. So that's one aspect. Do you want to show another one?
No, basically that's it. We actually coach the children for 30 minutes. We bring them out of their class and they practice making their voice interesting. And we use books and we show them the book and then they make the animals talk.
And going along with that would be number six, which is pointing to the pictures when you read. The importance of that.
That is so important. I tell the children this is actually one of the most important things is to point to the pictures when you talk because children don't care about the words. They need to associate what you're talking about. If you're reading about a camel, you need to point to the camel so that the children understand, oh, that's the camel and there is his humps. So that's one of the things. And along with that is the next one, which is talk about the pictures. Again, talk about the pictures is very important because books only have a few words on a page, but the pictures are rich with vocabulary. And that's what we're trying to build for these children is a very well-developed vocabulary.
Number eight on the list is use I wonder statements. Explain how that works, Raphael.
This one's great. When I saw this, I thought, wow, that's brilliant. So you've read, let's say, the book, you read the character, you read the words, you pointed to the pictures. Now, before turning the page, to spice it up and engage the child more, you can say, I wonder why the dog is wearing a blue hat. I wonder why the cat is upset with the dog. I wonder what's going to happen next. And this, again, enriches that page, stimulates other thinking in the child's mind, and little by little brings in the child closer and closer to the text, to the picture, to the story, and to the reader.
I just like to add to that, curiosity, children, babies are born with curiosity, with curious minds, and curiosity drives learning. That's why we all like to learn. We're curious about something, and it's all about discovery. And so asking I wonder, making I wonder statements really triggers natural curiosity in the young listener.
And finally, number nine on the list of the nine best ways to read to young children, have fun.
Yes, that's the most important thing because that has to communicate that books are fun, they're exciting, they're interesting, they're full of knowledge and discovery. And I say to the children, if you're not having fun, then maybe this program isn't for you. And it's true. There, 99% of children love the program, but so once in a while, there's a few that say, I don't know, maybe I'm not having fun. But mostly, it's really fun for children.
That also speaks to the other important component is you're getting the siblings to interact with each other. If they're having fun, now there's this other aspect. They're fostering their relationship as brother and sister. And that's what I saw that came out of this. It's not just a mechanical, here's books, read to your children. This is a family event. It's about developing cohesion in the family, interaction through storytelling. And the book is just one opportunity for storytelling. But the relationship that gets built, that's the beautiful thing. That's what's fun.
One of the really positive aspects of the program, and actually the goal of the program, is teaching these preschool kids the appreciation for reading, bringing up their vocabulary skills, their comprehension skills. What are some of the benefits that the fourth graders, who oftentimes you say come in at about grade 2.5 reading ability, what are some of the benefits that they're getting out of doing this?
Well, I think they're seeing how fun reading can be and not just a struggle or something you do in school. And they're reading books that they probably never had access to, reading books, classics, for instance, Good Night Moon, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, some of these books that we have in our little library for them, they've never been exposed to. And so I think they're gaining some literacy themselves. Some of the kids have reported that they actually have learned new ideas and new words and new vocabulary themselves. They're also developing these bonds with their siblings. They're gaining confidence. They're helping their family, and they understand what they're doing is helping to give a foundation for learning to their young brothers and sisters that will foster learning for the rest of their lives. And this affects not only the young children and the reader, the families will be affected forever. The community is affected. The school districts and teachers are affected because children are coming to school better prepared.
You mentioned this, and it reminds me of a story that I think my sister was telling me about this, but I have an aunt. She's still living. She's 101 and is sharp as a tack. She was probably 4 years older than her next two siblings. So when she was a young girl, her job was to help take care of them. Now, we're going back darn near 100 years. We're going way, way back. Both mom and dad were almost illiterate, right? They'd come from a foreign country. They didn't have very good language skills in their own native language, which was a dialect. Neither of them could read. So this young girl, she went to school. She learned to read, but she also helped her next two siblings, her two brothers, younger brothers, learn to read, and she taught them mathematics at a very early age. They had a little chalkboard, and she would write mathematics, simple math problems, and teach them addition and subtraction and early multiplication. Both of those men became very good at math. One was a machinist, and you have to have some pretty good math skills, you know, if you're being a machinist, and the other one worked in the grocery industry, and he was a manager in a grocery store, and so you had to learn pricing and how to put all those numbers together, but they both credited the help of their older sibling with building the desire for the knowledge.
Think of the power that we're offering these young fourth, fifth, and sixth grade students, the power that they feel by knowing that they're sharing their knowledge with their youngest siblings and their mentors. We tell them they're mentors and they're committed to helping and empathy. There's a lot of empathy there as well for their younger siblings. They don't want their younger siblings to experience school maybe in the way they have experienced it with a lot of struggle.
Yeah, I tell my students, you hear things on the news, you hear all these statistics, and there's a lot of things that are outside of us that we really don't have control over, these external forces. But the one thing, at least one of the things that where you can exercise control and take a leading role is in this interaction with your younger sibling. We might not have control about like the weather, like the economy, other things out there, things you see in the news. They're elementary school aged children, but they see all this stuff on the news. I tell them, but here's a space where you can really make the difference. You're the world to your baby brother or sister.
The fourth graders that are participating in the program, they're improving their literacy and their comprehension. Are we seeing them get up to their grade level in reading or above?
You know, we haven't been doing it quite long enough to really grab hold of that data at this point. We're actually going to be going in and looking at how well the kindergarten students are doing, the ones that have been in our Read to Me program, how well they're doing in comparison to the other children who haven't been in the Read to Me Project program. So we're going to be doing that, starting to do that this year and next year. But as far as our upper grade students, we hear the stories, we hear from teachers and from the families themselves, but we're not clear actually how much that's improved their actual reading scores on the state tests.
Well, Barbara and Raphael, we're going to wrap things up here, but before we do, let's talk for a moment about the Salinas Valley Grows Readers program, which is a special event that Read to Me and the First Tee are putting on. It's in cooperation with CHISPA, First Five of Monterey County, and the Allisal School District. And this is an event coming up on Sunday, May 1st, between noon and 3 p.m. Barbara, you want to tell us a little bit about this? What's happening that day?
Yes, it's a family literacy event for families to come together. We're going to have some music. We're having storytelling going on. We'll have tents set up where children can hear stories read to by the Salinas City librarians. And we're having free books giveaway. We have lots and lots of books, and we'll be giving everyone a few books to take home with them, and they can choose those books. We have a musical book walk, so they're going to be able to play a game and win a book that way also, and some raffle prizes as well.
Yeah, it's cool. As soon as the families come in, they're going to get this passport that has a different activities and games, and as they proceed to each one and make their way through each one, they'll get it stamped, just as if they're traveling to different countries, and once they complete that, they turn that in, and that passport is their entry into a raffle, which we're putting together these great packages of gifts that are assembled by donations from local vendors and organizations. I'm excited just thinking about it, so I can't wait for it to happen. I hope everyone comes out there and really takes advantage of the fun and book that we have to offer.
Once again, that is the Salinas Valley Grows Readers project put on by both the Read to Me Project and the First Tee of Monterey County. It takes place at First Tee Golf Course, 1551 Beacon Hill Drive in Salinas, Sunday, May 1st, noon to 3 p.m. For more information, check this website, readtomeproject.org. Barbara Greenway and Rafael Hernandez, I want to thank you both for being our guests this week on the iHeart Community Spotlight.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much, Mark. And everyone, keep engaging and reading and talking and singing to your baby children.
You've been listening to the iHeart Community Spotlight, a weekly public affairs program of iHeart Media, Salinas Monterey. If you want information on our public affairs programming, just write to us in care of Public Affairs Director, iHeart Media, 903 North Main Street, Salinas, California, 93906.